only their boots and the holsters in decent shape. Two bandoliers of empty cartridge loops crisscrossed the chest of the blond man on top, while the bald man on the bottom wore a vest made entirely of rectangular pockets to hold ammo clips for an autofire blaster. Satisfied, Ryan whistled sharply through his teeth, once long, then short, and the others cautiously walked into the ancient battle room. Mildred studied the desiccated corpses.
Died killing each other. Been dead 4, maybe 5 weeks. Air system has kept down the smell.
Doc sniffed delicately.
But not removed it entirely. I must say, this locale is getting decidedly most pungent.
Don't breathe.
Stoically, Ryan looked around the room. Nothing much here to fight over. Bar's empty, no weapon cabinet in sight. And they clearly knew nothing about the Matrans behind the wall. Must have been personal. JB lifted the BAR and worked the bolt a few times.
None of their equipment is from standard military stores, so they didn't get it out of storage here. This is old and been patched many times. Seen a lot of work, too. Probably Mercy's or Cold Heart's.
Mildred wiped off her hands on her pant leg.
My question is, how did they get inside the redoubt? Could the door be down?
Must be. No other way in.
Resting the butt of his rifle on his hip, Ryan chewed that over.
So they somehow blasted through the nuke-proof door? Not likely. Somehow the bastards figured a way to open the door. Or worse, they were let in.
Sleepers?
Always a possibility.
Nudging the blonde corpse with the silvered toe of her cowboy boot, Christy frowned, her long crimson hair tightly circling and uncurling about her lovely face.
This is getting worse by the minute. Secret panels, suicide norms, now sleepers. I vote we go.
Jack pocketed a knife from the floor.
Check.
Ryan grimaced.
No. After the trouble we had with Ka, anything odd with the redoubts warrants a wreck.
JB shoved back his fedora and scratched underneath.
I agree. I don't care for it either, but we gotta know. These things are our lifeline.
Jack scowled, but didn't voice a differing opinion, and after a bit, Christy shrugged her acceptance. Mildred remained neutral. Doc extended a hand toward the door.
Lead on, Macduff.
Gingerly, JB went to work using flexible tools that slid under the jam. A loud click made everybody jump, except the armorer. He beamed a smile, and the door swung into the room. Attached to the handle was a simple affair of an old-fashioned pineapple grenade and string.
Kid stuff.
JB grinned, snipping the string and pocketing the grenade. The checkered ball and slim activation lever, or spoon as it was called in the pre-dark days, was a model from one of that era's world wars, but still deadly. The corridor in front of the office was dark, and a quick check showed the overheads were also smashed. In the dim light from the Matrans unit, they could see the standard redoubt map on the wall. This was level 5, office and communications. Below them was storage, power, and life support. Above them was the barracks, kitchen and hospital, and the top level, unmarked with a designation.
Stranger and stranger.
Ryan swept the muzzle of the Steyr SSG-70 back and forth in perfect rhythm to his own single eye.
We'll head for the elevator. One-on-one coverage, single yard spread. Soft penetration.
Jack tilted his head forward.
Top floor?
Check. If there's anybody here, they'll have supplies or people near the exit.
Makes sense.
Check.
Keeping near the wall, they felt the air move constantly over them in artificial breezes from the ceiling vents. There was no dust or a musky smell of mildew.
This base must have been absolutely airtight until the recent intrusion. Any supplies in the storeroom should be in perfect shape.
Could be what those two were fighting over.
Christy strained her spirit to sense any danger. Jack crouched to offer as poor a target as possible.
Triple stoop. Share goods and live.
Doc patted the teenager on the shoulder.
Wisdom indeed, my young friend. Share and live.
The albino teen ignored the compliment and concentrated on the job at hand. The end of the hallway was completely dark, and there was no way to see if the elevator was there, or the location of the door to the stairwell. Ryan realized there was no gentle breeze from above.
The ceiling!
He fired the Steyr upward, working the bolt action. The flashes from the muzzle showed a human figure holding a machine gun as he dropped out of the darkness. Fast and neat, the group split apart, their pistols and rifles barking in staccato reply. The figure jerked at each deadly impact, but he didn't fall or drop his weapon. Oddly, neither did he return fire. Then, the impossible happened. Without dropping his rifle, the stranger opened both of his hands as if majestically offering a holy benediction, and two heavy black balls landed on the carpeting with soft thuds, breaking apart and releasing their slim handles.
Grenades!
JB dropped his Uzi and dove toward the black spheres. Landing hard on his stomach, the armorer punched out hard with both hands. He scored a double hit, and the charges bounced down the hallway, disappearing into the darkness. JB covered his head with both arms, and Mildred dropped fast.
Three!
Open your mouths!
Two!
One!
Ryan closed his eye, and double explosions blossomed at the end of the hallway, filling the corridor with flame and thunder. Briefly, the fireball silhouetted the hanging man. Then, violent concussions slammed into the group. A searing wave of heat washed over them, closely followed by a rain of broken ceiling tiles and smoking debris. It made Ryan think of an ant in the barrel of a cannon. Somebody cried out in pain, and a rifle discharged. In rumbling fury, the blast expanded over them and moved down the corridor, smashing lights and slamming aside doors. Glass shattered somewhere, and an alarm began to sound. Partially deafened and battered, Ryan took heart at that. It meant power was still on somewhere in the redoubt, and each passing second brought them closer to safety. He knew a person died in the first few seconds of an explosion, or else survived. Slowly, the strident force died away in ragged stages, leaving in its wake a ringing silence with streamers of acidic smoke moving in the air toward the ducts like ghostly fingers.
Sweet Jesus! I've had fun before, and this isn't it.
Rolling onto his back, JB sat upright and worked his jaw a few times to try to pop his ears clear.
Yeah. Close one.
Too damn close.
Everybody okay?
Ryan used the rifle to lever himself upright.
Fire blast in hell. He'd felt better after torture.
A ragged chorus answered in the affirmative. Then a sudden movement in the smoky darkness caused a wild fusillade of blaster fire.
Cease firing! It's just the meat!
Ryan shouldered his long blaster.
He isn't alive.
Not anymore, you mean?
Dean removed the spent clip from his Browning and slammed in a fresh one. He stuffed the exhausted clip into a pocket where it rattled against others. Mildred patted her hands over her body in a quick check for wounds. There were a couple of holes in her shirt, but nothing worse.
No, he never was alive. Not for us, anyhow.
Whitish smoke drifting past his pale face. Jack was almost invisible in the dim corridor. He frowned.
Possum?
See for yourself.
JB gestured. Then he froze and touched his bare head.
Damn!
He turned and started down the corridor, scanning the floor. Blaster in hand, Jack advanced carefully and pulled a match from a pocket. Striking it on his belt, he studied what remained of the hanging man in the tiny flickering light.
Dead. For a while.
Sharp spikes of rusty metal jutted from a wooden board that pierced the man's body in a dozen places. Ryan stepped beside the albino teenager.
Nailed in place.
He craned his neck to see into the smashed ceiling. The other end of the board was screwed to a truck door hinge attached to the concrete roof. The match sputtered and died, so Jack struck another and lit a candle stub. Doc and Christy did the same. In the soft glow of the triple flames, the scene lost its ghostly feel and became merely another kill zone, as familiar as their own faces. Nudging a lump of twisted steel and plastic on the floor, Dean bent and lifted the dropped weapon.
M16A1 carbine.
Good?
No.
He tossed the broken weapon aside.
Yeah, the Gren did a good job on him. Like it was supposed to do on us.
The armorer returned, clutching his fedora.
Simple enough trap. When we approached, the chill swung down and everybody would naturally shoot at him. Then, when you put enough holes in the ropes, he drops the grins and goodbye.
Smoothing out the crumpled brim, he smiled grimly.
Exactly the sort of thing I'd do.
JB adjusted his hat to a proper cant. Blaster in hand, Dean moved to inspect the corpse. Chunks of the man were missing, his clothes only rags, and the ropes holding him in place were burning in spots, allowing an arm to hang freely. What little remained of his clothes appeared to be a tan leather jacket.